Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om 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 Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 33, Activities of Kapila. Text number 27. Activities of Kapila. Nicharuta samadhitvat
Nicharuta samadhitvat
Parabritta guna brahma
Parabritta guna brahma
Nasam nasasmara tadatmanam
Nasasmara tadatmanam
Svapne drishtam evotitaha
Svapne drishtam evotitaha
Nitya
Nitya
Eternal,
eternal.
Arudha,
Arudha,
situated in,
situated in.
Samadhitvat,
Samadhitvat,
from trance,
from trance.
Parabritta,
Parabritta,
freed from,
freed from.
Guna,
Guna,
of the modes,
of the modes.
Of material nature,
of material nature.
Brahma,
Brahma.
Illusion.
Illusion.
Nasasmara.
Nasasmara.
She did not remember.
She did not remember.
Tada.
Tada.
Then.
Then.
Atmanam.
Atmanam.
Her material body.
Her material body.
Svapne.
Svapne.
In a dream.
In a dream.
Drishtam.
Drishtam.
Seen.
Seen.
Iva.
Iva.
Just as.
Just as.
Utitaha. One who has arisen.
One who has arisen.
Situated in eternal trance and freed from illusion, impelled by the modes of material nature, she forgot her material body, just as one forgets his different bodies in a dream. Purport. The great Vaishnava said that he who has no remembrance of his body is not bound to material existence. As long as we are conscious of our bodily existence, it is to be understood that we are living conditionally under the three modes of material nature. When one forgets his bodily existence, his conditional material life is over. This forgetfulness is actually possible when we engage our senses in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. I'm going to be reminded of my body so long as I get poked all the time. You see, you know, when you make a garland and you chop off the carnation, like that, those things are really sharp. So wearing a garland sometimes can be torture. As opposed to... Just put that there. Been poked in the back of the neck. Okay. When one forgets his bodily existence, his conditional material life is over. This forgetfulness is actually possible when we engage our senses in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. In the conditional state, one engages his senses as a member of a family, or as a member of a society or country. But when one forgets all such membership in material circumstances and realizes that he is an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord, that is actual forgetfulness of material existence. This forgetfulness usually occurs when one renders service under the Lord. A devotee no longer works with the body for sense gratification with family, society, country, humanity, and so on. He simply works for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. That is perfect Krishna consciousness. A devotee always merges in transcendental happiness. This transcendental happiness is called eternal bliss. According to the opinion of devotees, constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord is called samadhi or trance. If one is constantly in trance, there is no possibility of his being attacked or even touched by the modes of material nature. As soon as one is freed from the contamination of the three material modes, he no longer has to take birth to transmigrate from one form to another in this material world. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahayam Tadatisva Padantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langhayate Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarinam. Parama illusion. Nasasmara. So, devotional service devotional service, bhakti, has outcomes, has a purpose. And the purpose or the one of the outcomes of the performance of devotional practice is described here. That is, one will forget one's external or material existence and one becomes fully absorbed in one's spiritual identity. Nityaruda Samadhitvat. Situated in trance, samadhi. Samadhi. And Parabritta Guna Brahma. The H is in a different place, right? Not Brahma. Brahm HMA, but it's BH, Brahma. Illusion. Freed from the illusion that comes as a result of contact with the modes of material nature. Not ignorance, not passion, not even goodness. Nasasmara. Tadatmanam. In this case, Atma refers to the body. Atma can refer to the soul, it can refer to the body, it can refer to the mind. And of course we identify on those platforms variously. She did not remember her material body. Sorry? They're your keys. Oh, yeah, sure. I thought you wanted the garland. I was thinking, what do you want the garland for? Sorry. Okay. So, this reminds me of the various states of consciousness that our attention is focused on in life. The first stage of consciousness is anamaya. Right? Anamaya means I eat, therefore I am. Right? Just like a baby. A young baby. They're crying. What does it mean? Give me something to eat. Right? Mum gives a baby something to eat and then it goes to sleep. Huh? Goes to sleep. Satisfied. And then wakes up and is hungry again and then needs to eat. You know, my earliest memory that I can think of is when I was given my first milk bottle. And I remember the taste of the teat. Do you know what I mean? And the rubber on my tongue. Ooh, what's that? I hadn't had that before. So, you know, at that age, we're pretty much unconscious of anything that's going on around us, except the fact that we're hungry and it's causing us pain. So that's a very low level of consciousness. And then as our awareness expands, our consciousness expands, then we rise to the level of pranamaya, which means I am what I do. You know, so sometimes when we're asked, you know, what do you do? What do you do? Or who are you? People mean, what do you do? Then we'll say, you know, I'm a mechanic, or I'm a labourer, or I'm a doctor, or whatever. We identify ourselves with our activities. So it's relating very much to the body, to the physical activity, to our karma, our action. This is a more advanced understanding of just, I need, and of course, if you don't eat, what happens? If you don't eat, what happens?
You die.
You die. Yeah, you cease to exist. So this is a fundamental element of existence, this consciousness of I eat, therefore I am. I notice it now when I'm older and I get, because I have this diabetes, when I go out for walks in this really cold weather, then I get hypoglycemia. Blood sugar levels drop for some reason because it's very cold. Body has to work on the glucose and it burns up the glucose in the blood very quickly. Then all of a sudden you're walking down the street and you feel, oh, what's going to happen? And then I'm very conscious of the fact I need to eat something. It happens even. It affects us all throughout life. This consciousness is not something that you only experience when you're a baby. Right? You don't think about it. When you're young and you're active, youthful, you can do anything. Or at least you think you can do anything. Right? As you get older, then you realise that you can't do anything or everything you think you thought you could. But we're very much, you know, a society and people in general work very much on these levels of consciousness or awareness, and especially on the awareness of what we do determines who we are, based on a very strong identification with the body. A further extension of that, of awareness, is, and more elevated, more expanded, is then manamaya. And this is, I think, therefore I am, right? We identify with the subtle level of existence. You know, the eating and the actions on the bodily platform are quite involved with the gross matter. Earth, air, water, fire, ether, or the five gross material elements. But beyond the gross material elements or the subtle material elements of the mind, the intelligence, and more subtle, the false ego. But a good part of society also operates on this mental, on this subtle platform, which is very much a reflection of what we do, and also involves music and art and dance and drama and activities of a more subtle nature, of a more intellectual nature. And within which is contained philosophy and philosophical inquiry as to the nature of existence and so forth. So this development of consciousness or this expansion of consciousness moves from a very gross understanding of existence and of identity to a more subtle level of experience and understanding. Still based on the bodily concept of life, though. Above that is more subtle understanding, and the kind of understanding that we're given in in the Vedas, because the Vedic literature deals with all elements of existence, from the gross material to the subtle material to ultimately to the spiritual, which is beyond the sensual experience. The Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the cream or the essence, and the Bhagavad Gita, this information that's contained within the Vedas gives us the essential learning or understanding of existence and of identity. So at the lower level, it's identification with material actions, or the actions of the three modes of material nature. But and these are all we understanding the causes of action in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, these are elements that are described as being part of the cause of action. So they're part of identity. They're part of our identity. But beyond the gross and subtle material energy is the spiritual energy. And the Bhagavad Gita starts off giving us this information. You're not the body. Although actually we are the body. It's a chincha bheda abheda tattva. Right, we can say you're not the body, but at the same time you need to eat. Even a transcendentalist, right, needs to eat, unless he's very, very advanced. As we see here with Devahuti, we see it sometimes with the devotees. They decide, you know, I'm going to eat very little. They try to be very renounced, right? Then after a few days, there's a feast, and we don't see it so much now, but I've seen it in the past. Devotees will eat they'll have a very small plate, right? But then they'll pile it right up with prasadam. Because you, even if we're a transcendentalist, we'll need to eat. Huh? Of course, it's done in a regulated fashion. The lecture to the first 15th verse of the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada gave in London. Prabhupada says, he's talking about the names of the different personalities that are described in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. And Vrikodara is Bhima's name, which means crocodile belly. Basically, that's what it means, Vrikodara, which means big eater. And Prabhupada says that Vrikodara was a voracious eater, right? But he could perform Herculean tasks. And then Prabhupada says, you know, eating a lot but not doing anything is not very good. But he says, you can eat sumptuously, but render service, right? Do something. Instead of, you know, we have the tendency, eat a lot and then go to sleep. So anyway, even a transcendentalist has to act on that level, or an aspiring transcendentalist. But we see here in the example of Devahuti, very, very advanced state of existence, where she's forgotten all of these. At that level of, and then the next level is Jnana Maya, or the understanding that I'm not the body, and a realization that I'm a spirit soul, because there's the side of rejection, or not so much rejection, but this development, or this understanding that I exist separately from this body, right? This is an advanced state of expanded consciousness, where we can, you know, we're bound in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's described that we have what is called our prarabdha karma, which means the reactions of our past deeds or our past activities that we're experiencing now and which are immediately present. And it's manifest in the form of the body that we've got. It's manifest in, what does Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami mentions, in either being poor or wealthy, healthy or sick, experiencing complications in life, like legal complications, right? You drove your car too fast, the speed camera caught you driving too fast, and now you've got a fine to pay, right? Now, whether you're a transcendentalist or not, you'll still have to pay your fine, right? So that's our prarabdha, our immediate karma that we have to experience now with this body. And that will only be eradicated or transcended when we depart this body, right? That immediate karma. When one's in a state of samadhi, then there's a deep realization of our spiritual identity, along with the material body. But as this consciousness expands and develops, the identification with and the realization of our spiritual identity becomes stronger and stronger and stronger. It's not just an intellectual thing, I'm not the body, right? But there's a deep and abiding resting in that state of awareness. It's a state of being that exists within us already. It's not, as Prabhupada says, you know, the chanting of Hare Krishna is not an artificial imposition. Our spiritual identity is a reality. But initially, we're forgetful of our spiritual identity, and that has to be reawakened. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem Sadhya Kabunoi in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, as Krishnadas Kaviraj mentions, that the eternal perfection, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, that love for Krishna is a state of awareness or a state of being that already exists within us. It's not something that we have to create, but rather it's something we now have to uncover. Sravanadi Sudha Chitte Karaye Udoy. And we've got this word here, or Uttitaha. Uttitaha. One who has arisen. And so Udita means that which rises up. So our awareness or our understanding of this jnana maya, that I'm not this body, and the realization of it, rather than it just being an intellectual construct but rather there's a real, you know, when I look at my hands, then I don't identify as being the hand. Although, mind you, you know, if somebody pokes me in the ribs, hey, what do you poke me? This is how strong the identification is with the body, right? But if we are able to, even intellectually we can do this, Prabhupada explains in the second canon of the Bhagavatam, we can separate our sense of self from this body, right? And so, and Prabhupada gives the example along the lines of, you know, I don't say I hand, right? I say my hand, right? So that means that I'm separate from my hand. Right? Even with the mind, we can observe the action of the hand, which is the gross material body, but we can also observe the actions of the mind. Sometimes not very pretty. Huh? Or sometimes it's out of control. I mentioned the other day at Urban Yoga how you can wake up in the morning and you've got some silly song. It's happened to me. I've been dry. It's summertime, everybody drives, or maybe not so much these days with air conditioning, but you can, driving down the road and you just pull up at the stop sign, stop lights, and then you hear some song on somebody else's radio, right? And it just happens to be a song that you listened to when you were a child or a youngster. I can't get no satisfaction. Right? And then you wake up the next day and you've got the Rolling Stones playing in your ear. So what's going on here? Mind and the subtle body almost has a life of its own. But we can observe it. We can observe ourselves as somebody separate from that working. So the advanced transcendentalist, by the performance of sadhana bhakti, which is what Kapila Dev has been explaining primarily, is the, and you know, this information is given within the Vedas. The Vedic literature gives us this, the key or the clues to success. The success is that we want to forget our material existence, material consciousness, to reawaken our spiritual identity. This is Jnanamaya. That I understand that I exist, or this body exists primarily not because I eat, or my identification is not what I do on the physical platform, not or on the subtle platform, but rather I have an identity as a separate identity as a jivatma, spirit identification, as opposed to the material identification. And a spiritual identification is, you know, observing everything that's going on, like the paramatma, the example of the two birds in the tree. The soul and the super soul, the atma and the paramatma. And the paramatma is witnessing everything. But also the jivatma in a realized state, in an advanced state of consciousness, is able to also observe and witness everything. And we're able to identify somebody separate from this body and also separate from the mind. Separate also from the actions of the intelligence, power of discrimination. And with the cultivation of especially hearing the Bhagavad Gita and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one is able to build discrimination to the point where one is able to see the difference between matter and spirit. One's able to see the differences between subtle matter and gross matter. And when one comes to that point of jnana maya, we understand that we're not the body, that we're spiritual by nature. Then we're, especially with the process of bhakti, and why bhakti is so important, is because the bhakti teaches us, now just as we have in the pranamaya and the manamaya, we have activities. And that manamaya is very much social, cultural, dance, drama, art, etc. When we rise above, or when we when the consciousness expands further from the identification or the realization that we're not the body, that we're spiritual by nature, then the science of bhakti teaches us what activities and what drama, what culture, what art is manifest in the activities or the actions of a self-realized soul. We see the actions of the spiritual world or the spiritual realm is taught within bhakti, and that gives the soul or a person who's realized their spiritual identification information about how to act on a spiritual platform, right? And that, just as activities in the material world give us some meaning in life and some pleasures, and there are goals to achieve. So similarly, on the level of bhakti, where the soul is engaged in practical activity, even though it looks like we're in the material world, actually we're not. We're in the spiritual realm because we learn the science of bhakti. And the science of bhakti teaches us how to act and how to transcend the actions of material existence and engage in the activities of spiritual existence. And when one's absorbed in action or activity on that level, then one starts to forget one's so absorbed in the actions of spiritual activity that one forgets one's material identification. It's not that it's not there though, because the devotee still, we have two levels of activity, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains. There's our conditional life, right? So even though we might, you know, in the kirtan, we might experience Jai Haribol, you know, I'm a spirit soul and I feel invincible. After class, you'll still go and take prasadam, right? Even though you've realized I'm not the body. So therefore, and you know, we see in very elevated personalities like Raghunath Das. Like we see very elevated personalities where Raghunath Das is so absorbed on a transcendental platform that he got his energy and, you know, pran, if you like, from eating. And even he was still eating, though, but a few drops of buttermilk every day or every second day, right? But, you know, even though, yes, theoretically you can do that, and he did do that, you try and do it. We try and do it, and it just, you won't be able to do it because it's just not that deeply absorbed, no? That deep samadhi, deep realization of one's spiritual identity. So that when, then one's life force doesn't come from eating necessarily, but rather it comes from the spiritual platform. It's very, very advanced. But even he still had to have something, right? So this development of consciousness is the point where we're fully engaged in devotional service. Still, we've got practical considerations. We have to eat. We have to sleep. You know, we can't necessarily live like Sukadev Goswami, who just wandered around, no clothes, nothing, you know, totally on a transcendental platform. But even he was, even Sukadev Goswami was stopping at the householder's house for as long as it took to milk a cow, right? To get some sustenance. Yet it explained in the Bhagavatam, he did it primarily for the benefit of the householders. Right? It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam. He did it primarily because we assume that he would do some preaching. Very, very advanced, completely off of the bodily concept of life, but still had to keep the body going. So we've got, and that's conditional. So we've got our liberated activities and we've got our conditional activities at the same time. And so we can't, just in case, you know, anybody's thinking that I'm going to be in samadhi and I won't have to do any of these mundane things. So long as we've got a material body, in most cases, we have to look after it. And so therefore, we've got our conditional actions. Cleaning our teeth, washing our clothes, you know, all of that kind of boring stuff. Chinchuripa says to me, oh, this is so ritualistic, having breakfast every day. And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? You've got to have breakfast. Try going without and see how you go. So sadhana, you know, sadhana bhakti is designed to elevate us to this point of samadhi where we forget or we're able to identify so strongly with our spiritual identity that we can transcend not be totally absorbed in just material existence. Of course, mind you, that doesn't mean that we should, you know, we become so forgetful that we don't look after the material facility. I can't remember where I saw it. Prabhupada had written up a list of importance for, I think it was who's the artist?
Jadurani.
And it was health first, chanting second, service third, reading fourth. Right? Now that was in a letter, I think. So that was a personal instruction for her. So don't think, you know, that because she was sick, she wasn't well. So Prabhupada, so you know, we could maybe think, yes, so I'm a transcendentalist and I don't have to wash my clothes or whatever. You know, like Sukadeva Goswami, Sukadeva Goswami appeared like a madman. Right? It mentions, and the people who didn't have a vision of transcendence couldn't see his. It mentions in the Bhagavatam, he was uncovered, which means not uncovered, undiscovered. His identity wasn't apparent to the general mass of people. And so they kind of treated him like he was crazy, throwing, you know, insulting him, throwing rocks at him and throwing their rubbish at him, because he was on the completely transit. But, of course, when Sukadeva Goswami came into the association of the sages at Namasharanya, that was Sukadeva Goswami, when he came into the assembly of the devotees or the sages and the sadhus that had congregated to be with Maharaj Parikshit in his last days, and Sukadeva Goswami came, then because of their elevated vision and their ability to see not on the material platform but on the spiritual platform, right? When Sukadeva Goswami came, then everybody stood up and they gave, you know, he's being, and this happens to the devotees sometimes. We get abused and criticized or whatever. But as people's consciousness becomes elevated, they're able to appreciate and value the association of the devotees, so then they become more respectful. We see that in the activities of the Krishna consciousness movement. The devotees were sometimes disregarded or treated as sentimentalists or not being of much substance, but as people saw the development of the society and the spiritual culture, and they saw the advancement of the devotees, then they were able to recognize and appreciate them. So Sukadeva Goswami was recognized and appreciated by all of the saints and sadhus and sages that had come. So then his identity was revealed. He was uncovered, in one sense. Of course, he was uncovered because he didn't have any clothes on. There's also that element. But his, you know, that's the superficial manifestation of Sukadeva Goswami in that physical form. But his real identity is in a pure-hearted, fully realized transcendentalist. After he heard a Bhagavatam from, it's interesting, isn't it? He's on a Brahmanda, he was a Brahmanandi in the womb of his mother, and so that's why he was in the womb of his mother for 16 years. That's amazing, isn't it? His father had to plead with him. Come on, you need to take birth. He said, why? Inside, outside, doesn't matter where I am. Complete transcendentalist. And then Vyasadeva spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, revealed further the nature of transcendental activity in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we see in the Bhagavatam the behaviour, the mood, the sentiment, if you like, although that's probably not the right word, sentiment, the mood, the culture, the substance of devotion and devotional service and the activities of the devotees are all illustrated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada mentions, you know, the Bhagavad Gita brings us more or less to the point. There's some bhakti within the Bhagavad Gita. But the Bhagavad Gita basically brings us to the point of understanding that I'm not the body, that I'm spiritual by nature. Some elements of bhakti are introduced, but the demonstration of bhakti is fully manifest in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and especially in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, where we see the activities of the residents of Vrindavan. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is a natural extension of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of the reasons, I mentioned this the other day to the devotees, that we should study the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And the reason why we should study the Chaitanya Charitamrita, even if some devotees think, oh, can't read the Bhagavatam until I've read the Bhagavad Gita, can't read the Chaitanya Charitamrita unless I've read the Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's interesting, before Prabhupada finished the Bhagavatam, he went on a marathon to translate the Chaitanya Charitamrita and then get the devotees to print the Chaitanya Charitamrita within 2 months, which was physically, practically speaking, impossible. But of course, when Rameshwara, then Swami, told Prabhupada, this is impossible, Prabhupada didn't accept it. And he said, you know, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And so the devotees did it. Because Prabhupada understood, you know, the Chaitanya Charitamrita was pretty much a lost manuscript. It took Bhaktivinoda Thakur many years of searching till he found a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And Srila Prabhupada understood the essential importance of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're taught by the examples of the associates of Lord Chaitanya how bhakti is manifest in the Sankirtan movement, right? And how and we should understand that the activities of ISKCON, the preaching activities of ISKCON are, and Prabhupada says this, are an extension of the activities of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So what we're doing effectively is the history of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, but manifest in the modern age, what we're doing. And we act in bhakti based on the examples the information that we're given in the Bhagavad Gita. And you know, there's basic bhakti there. Mamana bhava mad bhakto mad yaji mam namaskuru. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Right. Offer a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water with bhakti. Right. What's the other one? 15:8, is it? 15, no. Yat karosi, yad asnasi, yaj jahosi, dadasi, yat tapasyasi kuntaya, tat kurushva madapranam. So there's bhakti in many other actually. Aham savasya prabhavo mata savam pravatate iti matva, etc. Everybody should know that verse. Buddha bhava samanvitaha. So small information about bhakti in the Bhagavad Gita, but more information in the Bhagavatam. And we have all of these great devotees, like we have here, Devahuti, right? Kapila Dev, Kadama Muni and Devahuti, and so many, Maharaj Chitraketu. Oh, so many. Amarish Maharaj, Maharaj Prithu, the list goes on and on and on in the Bhagavatam. And of course the residents of Vrindavan. But then how do we do that? We're not from the Vedic age. Right? We're not living in the pages or in a culture or society that we see within the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Although sometimes, you know, we see the Gurukul kids. Well, they're not kids anymore, they've grown up. They have beards, they wear hair, you know, they have their big long seekers and they've got a bit longer hair and they have this big seeker on the top. And I think these look like the pictures that you see in the Srimad Bhagavatam of Vyasadeva and other personalities. You know, they're just copying what they've read in the Bhagavatam. Of course, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we see the practical manifestation of bhakti of this anandamaya. Right, there's Jnanamaya, I know I'm not the body, but Anandamaya means the blissful experiences of the expanded consciousness, which is engaged in devotional service. And in the Kali Yuga, it's through the Sankirtan movement. What we're doing, our culture, our engagements, our devotional service and devotional practice, the culture of devotion is demonstrated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And so that's why the Chaitanya Charitamrita is so important for us, because the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the external manifestation of that bhakti culture, but not only, it's not just the external, it's also the internal cultivation as well, is demonstrated in the activities of these great devotees, right? In the example and the instructions that Lord Chaitanya gives, And you know, the demonstration of these very elevated devotees, like we see here, Devahuti in her last stages of spiritual cultivation before she leaves her body, where the awareness and the understanding of our internal spiritual identity automatically rises up. It's already there. We don't have to create something. We just have to uncover what's automatically there. And how do we do that? Sravanadi sudachitte karaye udoy. It's done by the process of bhakti beginning with hearing, what we're doing now, even though it kind of looks like we're not doing anything. But this is an essential element of cultivating this state of samadhi, or this meditation, is by hearing about it. By hearing about the process of how to achieve it. And you know, how to practically engage oneself. And our practical engagement is performing all of the items of bhakti, as is exampled by Ambarish Maharaj, Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo. The first thing we do is what? What's the first thing we should do? Oh, yes. Mamana Bhava Mad Bhakto. Or think of me. Become my devotee. That's what Krishna says. In seed form, it's there in the Bhagavad Gita. Right? Mamana Bhava Mad Bhakto. Think of me and become my devotee. Right? Well, how are we going to do that? Well, here it is. Get up in the morning, go to Mangaladi, chant your rounds, worship the deities, do an offering, clean the courtyard. Or, you know, we've got huge amount of effort to put on a big festival for 8,000 people. One said, you've been wondering, why are we putting ourselves through all of this trouble? But actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you know, the festival days like Janmashtami, Ekadasi, these are the source of inspiration for the devotees. Utsaha. It's called Utsava. But the root of that is Utsaha, which means enthusiasm. Right? We get our enthusiasm from these. Even though we're creating quite a bit of a headache, Krishna Prabhupada created this headache for us. We enjoy it. Oh, Haribo! Because it's enthusing. And in all of that, you realize, actually, by that engagement, you realize, I'm not the body. I didn't eat, right? Interesting. On the days of the festivals, we fast. We don't eat. So no anamoya. Although, you know, most of the day we're thinking, boy, I'm looking forward to midnight. I'm looking forward to the feast tomorrow. But we go without it. And in that way we remember, I'm not the body. Very practical, really, when you think about it. We don't do it every day because we're tired of it. But certain special occasions we fast. And that is an inspiration for us to... And our realizations and advancement is secured by those small austerities that we perform. And we see that this behavior is modeled in the activities of the Mahajans, and especially it's modeled and demonstrated in the activities of the Sankirtan movement as demonstrated by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. And so that's how we learn to we learn the culture of bhakti. And Prabhupada put all that effort into getting the Chaitanya Charitamrita published. Translated, went on a marathon, then got the stop the schedule of the printing of the Bhagavatam, just stopped it. And Prabhupada, he did this twice actually, interestingly enough. You know what the other book that Prabhupada stopped his Bhagavatam printing schedule for? The Nectar of Instruction. I was earlier this year in Mayapur. I got an opportunity to talk to Rameshwar Prabhu, and he was in charge of the BBT. And he did, and Rameshwar is an engaging. He's a engaging speaker. Very entertaining and very engaging. He gets completely absorbed. He was explaining to me how they were had their schedule for the Bhagavatam and how Prabhupada stopped it just to publish these extra books. And of course that's to our benefit, because we then see the activities and the exemplars of this Ananda Maya. And these personalities are fixed in their devotional practices above and beyond the material conception of existence, but practically engaged in activities of the here and now, not just in some ethereal world of irrelevance. Right? Our bhakti culture is fully relevant to the lives of people, because it demonstrates how you can be part of this world, but again beyond it, right? Practically speaking. And so even though we're going to work or whatever, we're doing our so-called business, right? There's the physical body, we've got to look after that. There's the emotional self, we've got to look after that. There's our social self. Prabhupada says here, you know, this is what we generally identify with. What is it? here. In the conditional state, one engages his senses as a member of a family or as a member of a society or country. A devotee no longer works with the body for sense gratification with family, society, country, humanity, and so on. Right? But we do. Actually, when you think about it, we do. But it's in the context of this is what I do for Krishna. And so therefore, it's not on the bodily identification that I'm an Indian or I'm an Australian or I live in Albert Park. But we do, actually. But the context within which we do that is our devotional service. And of course, that's why we've got to look after our families. We've got to eat and sleep and, you know, look after the gross and subtle elements of the body. But the purpose for doing that is to preach, is to perform sankirtan, for us, how do we do that? We distribute books, we go out and chant Hare Krishna, we distribute prasadam. This is our business. But that's not a material activity. That's on the purely spiritual platform. Even looking after our kids. Because the whole purpose of doing that is focused on being a devotee, then even though it appears to be the same as the bloke next door who's not a devotee, it's not the same activity, because it's focused on pleasing Krishna. It's focused on the activities of, well, they look like ordinary activities, but they're not. They're the activities of bhakti. Right? Why we and so therefore, as I mentioned before, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, we have our conditional activities and we have our liberated activities. And we minimize the conditional activities such that they don't override our spiritual focus. And in fact, they support our spiritual activities, and so therefore they're part of spiritual life. So getting up in the morning, cleaning your teeth, doing your ablutions and so forth, ordinarily we would say, ooh, that's conditional activity, right? But because the conditional activity is kept to a minimum, and it's the basics that we perform so that we can go and do all of our bhakti, then even the material activity is no longer material, but they're spiritual, kept to a minimum, right? So, in that state of consciousness, one can be elevated to the same level of liberation or realization as Devahuti. Pretty cool, huh? Even just the normal old things that we do. Going to work. Huh? How exciting is going to work? Who jumps out of bed in the morning and says, "Joy, it's Monday morning. Yoo-hoo, let's go for it. I can hardly wait to get to work." Does anybody do that? No. Monday morning, let's go to school. Oh no, not school again. Huh? Some people like to go to school. You can see I didn't ever like to go to school. I want to play. Life is for playing. Huh? Life is for, isn't life for enjoying? Huh? How come we got to work so hard? But a devotee can be enthusiastic about what he, you know, what he or she's doing. It's another opportunity, another day to serve Krishna, even if it is somewhat moribund or mundane, some of the things that we have to do. But because there's a spiritual focus, that activity is pavitram idam uttamam, right? Raja vidya raja guyam. This is the king of knowledge, the king of secrets. The activities of the devotees, even though they look like the activities of the materialist, they are not. That's amazing. So we do the same things, but because the focus is on pleasing Krishna, the focus is on preaching, and Krishna says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, there is no one more dear to me than he who teaches this knowledge to the devotees. Right? And that's why, because that's bhakti, to the Sankirtan movement, to give others an opportunity to reconnect with their spiritual identity. Ultimately, everybody's a devotee. Right? Ultimately. Maybe a bit of distance between where they are now and where they're going to be in the future, but ultimately they're all devotees. So when we engage in that spiritual culture, and that's why the Chaitanya Charitamrita is so important, because it demonstrates how the Sankirtan mission is pursued. There's our spiritual advancement that we're concerned about, but that's manifest in compassion for others. Very important. And why, you know, okay, we chant Hare Krishna, we study Prabhupada's books, whatever. We do all of those things, but the real purpose of the Sankirtan movement, the real purpose for doing those things is consolidated or solidified in going out and preaching, giving people books, giving them the holy name, giving them prasadam, teaching them how to become devotees, is purifies all of the other activities that we're performing. They need to go together. So this knowledge, this cultivation of bhakti, and it's been described here by Kapiladev, and here now perfected by Devahuti, right? Go to the point of samadhi. And we can also be at that point of samadhi by full absorption in the bhakti culture. And be fully engaged basically in Sankirtan. And that may be just a simple thing like cleaning the courtyard also. It's very powerful, and it manifests in very interesting... And we see... I often repeat this, but it's a good example. Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayo. Ambarish Maharaj was always thinking of the lotus feet of Krishna. But what did he do? Karo Hare Mandira Marjanadishu. What did he do? He went to the Mandir. He went to the temple. And what did he do when he got to the temple? He cleaned it. We think, hang on, he's a Mahajan. What's he cleaning the temple for? Well, that's what Mahajans do. That's pretty far out. So he sets a great example for us. But he also, he heard, right, Srutim, what is it, Srutim? He heard of the activities of a tutor, of Krishna, But he also preached as well. Preached. Preached by example. And preached by, you know, preaching. Speaking. All right. Anybody have any comments or questions on any of these points? Matasmriti jnanam apohanam cha. Yes. Savasya chaham. I'm in the heart of everybody, and from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. Yes. The more you forget. Okay. I can tell you the solution to that problem, but go on. What's the take? Go and preach. Go and distribute books. Go out on Harinam. Now, why is that helpful? I'll tell you. I, like you and probably all of us, I've studied Prabhupada's books. You know, and then half an hour later, I can't remember what it was that I read. And I think, what's the point of this? What's the point of this? I read these books. And then I can't remember anything. Right? So I thought. Right? Then a few weeks later, I was talking to somebody, and then all of a sudden, all this stuff that I read came out. And then I realized, whoa, it wasn't lost. Right? Because, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains this, the way the mind works is that we have our, and even empirically, we can understand this, we have our working memory. In computer lingo, it's like our RAM, random access memory. And we have that too, actually. Computers mimic somewhat the human mind, somewhat. But, you know, if you want to keep that information, you put it on the, you store it in the long-term memory, right? In our disk drive, or these days our solid state, you know, RAM. It's also random access memory. So when we study something, it goes into our active memory, but then our mind stores it or puts it. It goes into a kind of a, we're unconscious of this, but it goes into a place where we kind of, it gets assimilated, right? Just by the mind. The mind is such an amazing machine. When you think, it's a subtle machine, but it is a machine, and it has a function. We can observe the way it works, right? So then that information gets stored from our mid-term memory into long-term memory, and it stays there. And then Krishna is such a, he designed this machine in such an amazing way. So, you know, you've read something. Then half an hour later, you think, what the hell was it that I just read? And you can't remember it immediately, right? But then it gets stored away, processed and stored away. Then next week, you're preaching to somebody, the topic comes up, and then all of a sudden, all of this stuff that you read that you thought you'd forgotten, boom, out it comes. When you needed it. Right, so that's Krishna facilitating you. You didn't need it 2 hours later. And in fact, we hadn't actually processed it by that point. Do you understand? It's a subtle machine. And we can see it working. I know, we have a computer, we have a software for managing our donor management called the Razor's Edge. And I've got a book that I encourage everybody who uses that program, and it explains how what it does and how you use it, right? But it's like eating cardboard to read that book. It's horrible. You know, just reading it, it's not a manual, but it describes what it's for. So it's not that exciting. But it's a good idea to know how your tools work and how you can use them, right? And so I forced, I'm not sure how many of the people that I've given the book to have actually read the book, but I forced myself to read that book because I wanted to, you know, it's a tool, so you need to know how to use it. And, you know, very often you get a software package and you try to use it, and you think, what is this stupid thing? I can't even work this out. This is useless. But then you go and read the manual and you realise, oh, that's how it works, right? So I know how to use that program. Even I don't use it myself, but I can tell others how to use it, right? After having read that book, even though it's as boring as hell to read. But I've forced myself to read it and now I know. And I can tell people, here's what you do. They go, how do you know that? I say, I read the book. Yeah, this is what. If you're having a software problem, well, the answer is go and read the manual, and it'll tell you how to use it. So, sometimes that, like when you're reading it, and you think, oh, this is so dry, or I just read, you know, a chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, but I can't remember anything. Don't be fooled by that apparent loss of awareness or that loss of knowledge. It's gone in, it goes in, and it gets processed on a subtle platform by the mind, midterm and then long term. And then when you, and this is why I say, you know, and why it's said, you know, if you don't share knowledge, then you'll lose it. Confirmed by the computer. We, we can read the Bhagavad Gita. Why, and why I'm encouraging the devotees, you know, just don't, it's not enough. It's certainly good, and we should not do it, but it is not enough to just stay at home and have a home group reading program. That's not bad, it's good. But unless we take that knowledge and go and distribute it to others, we'll forget it because we're not using it. That makes sense? We're not distributing it. What happens, and this is the art of teaching, you know, very often the teacher learns more than the students. Because, and this is why preaching is so important, because we've learned all this stuff. But unless we go out and give it to others, we'll forget it. And we won't get that realization, that deep vigyan, right? Learn, experiential learning confirms our theoretical understanding of things. So we read, then we think, oh God, I don't remember any of that. But if we don't go and share that with others, then we will forget it, and it won't be as powerful, or it won't be as realized as if we read it. And then every week we go out and try to do book distribution. This is the practical way of doing it. Or go out and do Harinam or do some practical service that supports the preaching. Then we will forget things. But if we go and preach means, you know, talk to others and do it appropriately. You know, not that we just find somebody so that we regurgitate everything that we learned. This is in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, the appearance of Narada. The teacher has to, and this, Prabhupada says this is called realization, has to present the learning understanding the essence, the essential teaching that needs to be delivered, but delivering it in a fashion that's relishable and relevant to the person that you're speaking to. Right? So, you know, when you're talking to somebody on the street, you don't go, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, you know, and then Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. They're going to be like, what? It's got to be presented in a way that they can, it's relevant to them and they can relate to it. And so that's called realization. But not making a big showy display of how much you know, but giving what's relevant and pertinent to that person. That then consolidates what you learned. Right? If we don't, if all we do is just sit at home and we don't go out and give it to others, then a lot of our learning will just stagnate and we'll be lost, effectively. Right? So that's why, you know, you see in the lives of the great devotees, Prabhupada didn't just sit at home and study the Bhagavatam or translate the Bhagavatam. What did he do? He went to the printing press. He printed books. Then he went out on the street and gave it to others. Ostensibly, he looked like a merchant. Right? But he wasn't. He was giving transcendental knowledge. And that's essential. And of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said to Prabhupada, whenever you get money, print books. Right? And print books not just to study them, print books to give them to others. Does that make sense? So if you really want to consolidate your learning as a devotee, put yourself out, get some books, go out on the street and distribute them. If you want quick, deep spiritual realization and learning, go for it. Go out on book distribution. It'll be shocking, but you'll become very advanced very quickly. This is why Prabhupada's disciples made huge advancement. Right? Because they just accepted what Prabhupada said. He said, go out on Harinam. They went out on Harinam. But that, when you first start as a devotee to go out and chant Hare Krishna in public, woohoo, that's a big challenge. Right? And some people don't do it because of that. It's too scary. Huh? But it challenges you. It's like you've got to stand up and say, I'm a Hare Krishna. Huh? Huh? So you've got to come out of the closet. You've got to come out. I'm a Hare Krishna. Go and get a job, you mug. Etc. So you get a lot of realization. You have to be very humble. First thing, and vidya vinaya sampane, one of the first qualifications of a devotee is humility. Well, doing book distribution teaches you humility very quickly. On the whole. Or just going on Harinam. So these things, even though they look very simple, on the whole, externally it's, you're just selling things. The internal, what's going on internally is very, very powerful. Exceptionally powerful. And so we see the devotees, they gave up everything. They lived in a temple. And Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction, that that's a symptom of a sincere devotee. Now, I'm not suggesting that you give up everything and go and live in the temple. Right? That's not what I'm suggesting. Preaching is what I'm suggesting. That makes sense of then what you do at home. And connects us to that, to the mission. Does that make sense? But then the realizations will just come, like you'll be so flabbergasted. It's like, wow, that's what it was for. That's why I'm doing this. Oh. Instead of thinking, what am I doing this for? So if we go out and preach, then we realise, well, that's it, I got it. That's what Prabhupada said we should do, and now I know why. Rather than, well, what am I doing this for? So study the chant Hare Krishna, yes. Worship the deity, yes. Study the books, yes. But the combination of all of that, practically speaking, if we want to make rapid spiritual advancement and realise why I'm doing this, is we go and preach. So then, you know, we read the book. Next day we think, God, what was it that I was reading? I can't even remember it. But then a week later or 2 weeks later or even a month later or even years later, right, you're preaching and it comes out. Then you realise, woo, wow. That right, Kiana? Yeah? Yeah. It's amazing. You Stuff that I read 30 years ago still keeps on coming out. Of course, there's a lot of stuff that I read that I completely forgot as well. But if we're preaching, it'll keep, you know, rotating around. Alrighty. Who's feeling hungry? Okay. Eat sumptuously, but render service as well, okay? Vrikodara. Voracious eater, Herculean tasks. And so Prabhupada, in that class, Prabhupada quotes a Bengali saying, which I can't. But basically, he says, you know, the more you eat, the harder you can work. Okay, Pantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement ki jai.